Cellist Luca Sulik and Stefan Hauser performing U2's Where the Streets Have No Name. It's 28 minutes past 3. Let's head into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And with me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is horticulturalist Jim Foray. He is also an instructor here at UL Lafayette in the School of Geosciences in their Environmental Sciences Department and teaches primarily plant science here at the university. Jim, we had a chance, fortunate meeting. I believe it was yesterday.
No, it was the Monday.
Day before yesterday, May 19th.
May 19th.
And that's a really important date to a project that you've been involved with for the past 3 years. Some of our listeners may remember seeing this the inception of this project in the news 3 years ago, and that was the moving of a very large oak tree, now named Mr. Owl, down in New Iberia, close to New Iberia. So if you could set that bit of history for us, 3 years ago, what happened in that area that caused the moving of Mr. Owl?
All right. Well, really, with me, it started about 5 or 6 years ago. Kelly Peltier, who lives next door to Mr. Owl and who considered him her tree, and I say him because she's the one that named him Mr. Owl. And she calls him Mr. Owl because her grandfather would come to visit her, and apparently that was his nickname. And he would always make whoever was driving him to see Kelly stop so he could admire the tree. He thought that was such a pretty tree. So Mr. Owl is where the name came from. And about 5 or 6 years ago, Kelly, I didn't really know Kelly, but I knew her family. She called me, and she wanted me to come by because she was concerned about her tree. She knew there was construction coming up along Highway 90 with the making it into the I-49 ready thoroughfare. And so I was communicating on a regular basis with Bill Fontenot, the Department of Transportation guy. And so I called him and asked him. He said, well, there were no plans to move Mr. Owl at that point. I mean, to do any harm to the tree. And I didn't ask the right question. They didn't have any official plans. But the service road, part of the project was building overpasses, improving the driving surface, and putting in service roads. Well, the service road, there was no room to put the road between the tree and the highway, 90 surface. So the tree would have to go, or the road would have to be designed around the tree. And at that point, at some point, say about a year out, someone knocked on Kelly's door and said he was with the Department of Transportation. They were going to move it. I mean, they were going to build the road past her house, the service road, because she was set back on the edge of the right of way. And that not to worry, they weren't going to block her driveway. They were going to leave it open because then she would just drive out on the Highway 90. And so she said, what about my tree? And he said, well, the tree is going to be destroyed. And so she called me in a panic. And at that point, I was working with the university and the Department of Transportation on some projects. I couldn't get involved directly. But as a member of the New Iberia Optimist Club, I approached the president and asked her, our first woman president, by the way, asked her if she would consider taking that on as a project, at least informing the community what was getting ready to happen. And she did, and the community, a number of people were upset by what was happening, and they made phone calls. School children wrote letters to the DOT, and, you know, all the usual stuff, the garden clubs of Louisiana, from all over the state, garden clubs were writing letters of support not to destroy the tree, because by that time Kelly had registered the tree with the Louisiana Live Oak Society as Mr. Owl, and that's the name. Mm-hmm. New Iberia Optimist Club chose that year, instead of planting a tree for Arbor Day, they decided to save a tree. That was their slogan for the year. I thought it was pretty cool. And the community came up, you know, decided, yeah, we're going to do that. And so Bill Fondo came back with his engineers, and they decided, well, we're going to put a cul-de-sac in the service road on either side of the tree, and the road won't go past the tree. That was his solution. Leave it in place.
So initially the plan was to try and get the DOTD to change the road a bit. Mm-hmm.
And it was too late for them to buy in the timetable that where they needed to be for construction to buy new right away and pass the road around the tree. It was too late for that. And so as soon as the landowners adjacent, some of the community and the business people nearby realized that in order to go past the tree, they would have to go backtrack a mile and a half to an on-ramp at the overpass and then come back another mile and a half to the tree, 3 miles out of their way to go to Lafayette, for example, if they were south of the tree. They said, oh, no, this is not going to work. And people on the other side, if they wanted to go to Generette, would have to go back to the overpass and come back to travel to the east. And so it just they said, well, this is not going to work. This is impossible. It's a real imposition. So then DOT said, we're going to move it. We've always considered that possibility. And I was not involved in any of that. They hired a contractor from Houston who moves big trees all over the country, and they came in. And it's just an amazing process. And I was asked if I would be involved in the aftercare. And I've had a three-year contract with the contractor to take care of the tree after it was moved.
So that decision actually came from the DOTD that they were going to move it. It wasn't like school children picketed and they were forced, their hand was forced. They offered to move the tree. How common is that? How often does that happen?
First time in the state that I'm aware of. And it's been very successful. And Judith, you know, the community really cares. I just came out of a meeting on campus, and they were talking about, you know, the trees are important on campus and all this sort of thing. I said, you would be amazed at how many people really care. They just don't know what to do. Hmm. And same thing in New Iberia. People stop me every week and want to know how. They call him Big Al over there. How's Big Al doing? And they've taken ownership of it, and they're really proud that it was done. And the $300,000 or whatever the amount was, they don't even think about that anymore.
Well, tell us about the process of moving the tree, because I think people are trying to wrap their head around this idea. If they haven't seen that video, which, by the way, is available online, you can look for Mr. Al, the oak tree being moved. But describe that process. That's an enormous tree. How many tons did it weigh, or was it huge?
The tree is if I stand in front of the trunk and open my arms up wide, they're 6 feet from fingertip to fingertip. That's about how the diameter of the trunk across. It's an amazingly large tree. Mm-hmm. And the spread of the tree is, I think, 115 feet at its widest point. So it's got a big spread. And what they did is they came in at about approximately 42 feet. They cut a circle around the tree with a big soil saw down probably 5 feet, and they cut all the roots in that circuit, and they set up a tank to water the tree in place, and then they dug away the soil outside of that circle. So they cut all the roots in the big circle. 42 foot diameter is a big circle. My son's a submariner, and the big submarines are 42 foot in diameter. They're huge, and so it's a big circle, but it was not nearly the spread of the branches. You know, it's
so
not even half the spread of the branches.
The roots.
They cut a lot of roots off. They cut way over, probably 60, 70% of the root system off to do that. And because all the feeder roots were, most of the feeder roots are out around where the end of the branches are and beyond that and inside of that branch strip line. And so then they did that. They've removed all that, and then they wrapped it with plastic and wire and to kind of hold it together and keep it from drying out on the edges. And then they pushed pipes under it at 5 feet. They pushed a big, I don't know what diameter pipes they were, but 10, 12-inch pipes. They pushed them under the tree side by side to make a sort of like a if you can imagine the old cattle guards, there was like a support for the tree. And they picked it up with some cross members. They just big hydraulic jacks. They jacked it straight up in the air, enough to where I could walk under it. I would not walk under it. I didn't trust it.
But you could have.
I could have. Yeah, it was that high. And then Bayard has these special transport machines that are self-powered and just solid wheels underneath the bed of the truck. And they backed them under and lowered it back onto there, and they just drove it out of the hole. And it weighed maybe 800,000 pounds or more.
I think people are trying to imagine trying to keep that balanced.
Yeah, it was crucial that it be very balanced and never tip one way or the other. So, and the bed of the truck was set where hydraulically it could be kept level because it was driving up out of a hole up onto the highway. And then when they got to the other end, a mile and a half down the road, they had to drive through the ditch. And during the whole process, the bed of the truck had to stay level, perfectly level, so the tree wouldn't tip over and fall off. And set it on the ground. They drilled a well, and they set up an irrigation system outside of that 42-foot diameter circle. And they took soil from the site that they had saved, and they just put it on top of the ground, and they built up around it. And it was 5 feet high.
So they didn't dig a hole to put Mr. Al in. They just set him on top of the ground.
No.
Were you there watching as this was happening?
I wasn't under contract. I just wanted to know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And when the guys had to go home on the weekend, I would stay and water the tree and things like that to kind of help out. And then once it was in place and the irrigation was turned on, then I took over. And it's been 3 years. The first summer, if you remember, the summer of 2011 was dry, miserably dry summer. All summer, trees were dying all over Houston and Texas. And it was wind was blowing out of the south hard all the time. And it was really a stressful time. I visited him every day and made sure he was stayed hydrated. It's a balancing act, not to overwater and not to underwater.
Now, how much experience have you had with trees? You're a horticulturalist. Have you spent a lot of time working with trees? I know a number
They're
of
my life.
They're your life. Well, I know that you do work with plant science and deal a lot with wildflowers as well, smaller plants. But trees are a love of yours.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with trees, and so I've focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my wife, you know, I have 2 degrees in horticulture in order to be able to teach here, a bachelor's and a master's. My wife always says, you know, you'd think a guy with 2 degrees in horticulture would have a nicer looking yard than this or a prettier lawn than this.
Well, isn't that the old
adage? I get that thrown in my face all the time.
That's the old adage about the cobbler's children have no shoes.
Yep, that's right.
The horticulturalist's family has no garden.
But I have good trees.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell people again, remind them, my guest, Jim Foray, is a horticulturalist. He is also an instructor here at UL Lafayette and teaches plant science in the School of Geosciences. And we're talking about the moving of Mr. Al 3 years ago on May 19th.
Yes.
And so for 3 years after that heroic, historic move, Jim Foray has been under contract to care for the tree.
Right.
And your contract is now over. They figured that 3 years would be a good time to establish the tree. So describe what's happened over the past 3 years, how he has adjusted, and what's happened to this tree in that time.
I want to tell you first that I told them that they needed to hire me for 10 years.
10 years.
But they looked at me and said, an old guy like that is not going to last 10 years. So we're only going to give him 3. And so I proved them wrong.
Well,
unless at least 3.
And you don't plan on leaving Mr. Al alone.
No, I'm going to take care of Mr. Al.
Take care of him.
So the first summer, Mr. Al shed almost no leaves. It was really amazing. You know, and live oak trees are what we call tardily deciduous. That means they shed their leaves very late in the season. Mr. Al is an early shedder. He sheds his leaves. He starts shedding leaves in the fall. And by the time late winter's there, he's shed all of his leaves. A lot of live oaks hang on to them till right when the growth starts and they drop all their leaves. So he's a little different in that way. And he shed all of his leaves. And that's kind of a scary thing. This tree's been moved. He's 120 to 150, I think 120, 130 years old. The family that we believe planted the tree, those family members said 150 years fits their family history better. So I can go along with that. And he shed all of his leaves, and now there's a whole lot of praying going on that he's going to put on a new set of leaves. And he did. He put on a new set of leaves in the spring, and it was about 2/3 of what was on him in the summer before, because live oak trees grow more than once a season. They grow in the spring. They put out leaves and flowers and acorns, male flowers and acorns. And then there's a pause there, and then they grow some more leaves. The trees on campus are growing more leaves right now. And then there's another, maybe be another pause and grow some more. Well, Mr. Al only grew one set of leaves that second year. And so I was a little nervous because he looked thin. And then last year we had a really a well-hydrated year and plenty of adequate, way adequate moisture. I didn't have to water nearly as much as I did the first year. And he put on the first set and the second set. And he looks normal, you know. He really looks good. And so we've gone through that process again this spring. He shed his leaves. He's put on the first set and waiting for that secondary growth. And we've hired a very competent arborist to come in, and they're doing mulching, and they're doing we're using organic materials to feed the tree. And what a lot of people don't understand is that fertilizer does not make it – is not the what a tree that's been moved like this needs, because nitrogen fertilizer, the big element is nitrogen, grows a lot of top, but it doesn't grow roots. And you basically need time and just a good balanced nutrition. And so we're using organic fertilizers that break down slowly and release slowly and are not high in nitrogen to feed him. And we maintain a good healthy mulch. And we're watering only enough to keep him hydrated. I shoot for about an equivalent of an inch of rain a week, which is what South Louisiana gets on average. And if it rains, then when we shut everything down, we don't water on top of water.
And how can you tell the roots are growing? How can you do you test everything?
I took my class in 2012, one of the last classes. We don't have a horticulture program anymore. So I took one of my last classes over there, and we took a tool, an air spade it's called, a high-pressure air, and we blew the soil and mixed the soil, and we were able to find roots at about 36 inches, 24 to 36 inches from the cut ends. So in 1 year we had – a little bit over a year we had
– 2 to 3 feet of growth.
And then I went back with a post-hole digger, which is a good way – I tell people I have a PhD. My post-hole digger, yes. I carry it in the back of my pickup truck. And we took the post-hole digger, and I started digging, and I found roots at more like 6 feet from the cut-ins. And that's still a long ways from ground zero at the bottom of the berm, where I'd like to see roots. So that's why I felt like I needed to be there longer. But he's in pretty good shape. And one of our graduates from UL, Ryan Duyon, is a roadside coordinator for District 3, which is where Mr. Al is, Lafayette District. And he's got a lot of interest in the tree, and he and I have been working together. And I feel like he's going to do a good job of overseeing, and I'll be there for him if he needs me.
Mm-hmm. So again, just give people a sense of those roots. You talked about the hole that was cut initially. About how much footage and roots does it need to make up? You said it was like 115 feet across. Do the roots have to grow out to that point?
Yeah, it's going to have to grow out. It's going to have to grow roots to be really totally established beyond the end of the branches, and then because it's sitting, the root ball is sitting on top of the ground, and then there's a beveled edge, a feathered edge of soil brought out beyond that. And so it really, it's my way of thinking, those roots need to be down at the bottom of that berm and into the soil on the site and out of this artificial berm. And actually the engineers insisted on putting cables on it to keep it from blowing over in, say, a hurricane. I cannot imagine it doing that, but I feel like it's more of an attraction to lightning to have a cable that goes into the soil. I think that would be an attraction to lightning. And every time a thunderstorm comes through, I cringe, yes.
Well, I guess that would be a concern. I mean, we've all seen live oaks on their sides after hurricanes, and you can imagine if the root system was not firmly established, they would worry about that. So I guess that's a balance between worry about it toppling and worry about lightning.
Yeah. So another couple of years, and maybe they'll be able to take the cables off. I think one thing that's really interesting is I told you the root ball was 5 feet high, but the root system was only 30 inches deep. You know, people imagine the roots
like you've got a bit
mirroring the top of the plant. Mm-hmm. And in our soils, the roots only grow where there's a certain amount of oxygen. And when the oxygen level gets below 5% in the soil, then the roots don't grow there very easily. And so they grow laterally mostly. And in the soil there in New Iberia, that's prairie land, that was grassland. And there's what we call a hardpan down at about 30 inches, 3 feet.
Hard pan?
Yeah, roots don't penetrate it very easily. And water perches on top of it. And so it's a character of the soil that prevents roots from going that deep. So we dug it 5 foot deep, maybe to produce a support base for the tree. But the roots were only at 30 inches. It's pretty interesting to see that.
Hmm. How often do you go now?
Oh, at least once a week.
And do you spend some time there?
Yeah, we have a conversation. I have to be careful. I can't lean against the bark, though. I find the biggest black widow spiders I've ever seen tucked away in the bark of that tree. It's just amazing. It really is. So I don't hug him.
You don't cozy up to the
No, I don't hug Mr. Owl. Some trees I hug, but not Mr. Owl.
Just kind of sit on his roots.
I sit on the roots and we have a conversation.
Yeah. How is that? Now, obviously, you do love trees. You mentioned that you've worked with them. How has this project deepened, changed your sense of trees, your relationship with trees? Hmm. I mean, in a scientific or personal way?
Well, I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I'd never experienced that before. I just would never even dream. My limit on moving trees is 2 inches in caliper, and here's one that's
people are still digesting that it was actually moved.
Yeah, 72 inches in caliper, whatever it is. It's pretty close to 80 inches in caliper, in diameter. And so I just didn't imagine he would do so well. But live oak trees are very resilient, and if you just take the minimal amount of care, they really will turn around and tolerate, not that that's a license to abuse them. Mm-hmm. I have a little sideline business. I do consulting work. And horticultural and arboricultural, and my business has just taken off. I was just halfway consulted. Mm-hmm. I just do a little work every now and then.
Well,
this has really put me out there. I appreciate that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. How many people have had that opportunity? You said you think this may be the only oak tree that has been moved in the state of Louisiana in this way.
Now, Judith, we're getting ready to do the road, Highway 4, I-49 through Lafayette. And what about our beautiful oak trees in the middle of town? What are we going to do there? Can we work with them? Can we preserve some groups of trees in the community that were there before the elevated?
Mr. Owl is a success story. So
something to build on there, I think.
That's right.
Some hope.
That will be an interesting part of discussions as that moves forward. Again, we're talking about Mr. Owl, who 3 years ago on May 19th was moved in New Iberia. How far was it? A mile and a half? A mile and a half. And he's successfully rooting, establishing himself in this new place. My guest, Jim Foray, was contracted by the DOTD to care for the tree over the past 3 years, and will now continue that personal relationship with the tree going forward. And I imagine that really helps in your classes here at UL.
I brought a lot of my classes by there, and I would invite people to go. Mr. Al is at, I think it's exit 130, the Weeks Island Road exit off of Highway 90. Pull off, park your car, take your children, walk out there, walk up onto the mound, sit on his roots, check him out. It's amazing. And and people stop me and say, how is your tree? It's not my tree. Mm-hmm. It's a community tree. It's a state's tree. It's on the state right away. It belongs to the state of Louisiana, and it belongs to everybody. Go meet him.
Mm-hmm. And,
pretty cool guy.
We talk a lot about oak trees. It's one of those symbols in our state that we, I guess, in some ways we give lip service to. Mm-hmm. We toss that off. Oh, the oak tree, the live oak tree. We have one on one of our mugs sitting here on the table. But sometimes we don't take the time to really watch them, look at them, observe them. And this would be an especially good one to think about that resiliency, as you said, and that solidity that has made it a symbol here in our state.
May I thank Bill Fotno with DOT for taking – he might be your parish president. You live in St. Landry Parish?
I do.
He's your parish president now.
That was his vision.
And Kelly Pelcheri, who took ownership of it as being the neighbor of the tree.
And that was her grandfather it's named after.
Yes.
Yes.
And Susan Hester Edmonds was the president of the New Iberia Optimist Club that year, and she took it on as a personal project. And all those people are really amazing people and tough because they took a little heat about doing it at first, and It's pretty cool.
Well, completely successful project. Yeah. A lot of love and dedication to that project.
And I'm so glad I ran into you on the sidewalk on the 19th. It took me about an hour before I realized the significance of the date in our conversation.
Right.
You told me we needed to talk about this.
Well, it's like those roots. There are pathways we know not of that link us all together. Well, Jake, thank you so much for coming by to tell us about that project, Jim. You can go online, look for Mr. Owl Moving New Iberia Parish, and you'll find that video. And it's a very moving video to watch, to see that tree being moved. We appreciate it, and we look forward to hearing about some of your other projects that that you're involved with. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for asking.